गणपतिगुं हवामहे कविं कवीनामुपमश्रवस्तमं ज्येष्ठराजं ब्रह्मणां ब्रह्मणस्पत आनशृण्वन्नूतिभिः सेदसादनम् ॐ श्रीमहागणपतये नमः सदाशिवसमारम्भां शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्तां वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः वासुदेवेन्द्रयोगीन्द्रं दत्त्वा ज्ञानप्रदं गुरुं मुमुक्षूणां हितार्थाय तत्त्वबोधोऽभिधीयते. So we started looking into the crux of the text, the most important part, because we studied, like for instance, just theoretically, if we were in some advanced physics class and we wanted to learn E equals mc squared, then we would have maybe spent some time, again, I never was in a course that taught that, so I'm just hypothetically saying, we would have studied energy for some time and understood deeply what energy is, and then we would have studied mass for some time, and then we can equate and say energy is mass, because E equals mc squared means energy and mass are, you know, interchangeable, same thing. It's not two separate things. That's really what it is. A equals B means they're the same. Well, C squared is just a constant. It's just a measure. So like this. So here also we say, okay, so we studied the individual very closely. We looked who is the individual. Then we looked who is the Ishvara, the God, or what is the totality. And then we're seeing why they're one and the same. This is, so we looked into the two. And again, this is an introductory text. Each section, each topic that's discussed here, we look into so much other text. Some texts are more focused on tvampada pradhana, mostly looking at the tvampada, the individual, like Dhritarashtra Viveka they're doing Thursdays, or Keno Upanishad, more looking at the individual. Some is more tatpada pradhana, more looking at the totality, which at the moment not coming to mind, like in the Bhagavad Gita, the second section, meaning mid six chapters, seven to chapter 11, like this, something like that. So the middle sections, still 12, 7 to 12. There it's going to be more on this. And then, of course, the Aikim, why it's one. We look at that. So here, what we finished last time, after the teacher was pointing out why they're one and the same, why who the individual is in essence, and who Ishvara or totality is in essence is not something different. Right? This was pointed out. And also, then the teacher said, so you should not accept the duality, the difference between individual totality. And he said that's the cause for the samsara. We say that the bheda darshanam, seeing the difference, so bheda darshanam between me and the totality, also between me and you, also, right? Between us, between J, because if the wave isn't separate from the ocean, it's one, in essence they're both water, then the wave and the other wave are also essentially the same, right? Not different. So if the wave, that's, it wasn't pointed out here, but it's a corollary, right? You as the dream character, you as the dreamer, you're not two different things. So whole dream world is you. So all the characters are also you, right? It's not that I'm the character in the dream, I'm the one who dreamt, one and the same, but the characters in the dream are other people, others. No, they're also me, like this. So that's from the dream perspective. So from waking, we say it's similar. So in this way, we say in essence, there's no separation, no difference. And so we said that seeing the differences is what is causing the samsara, because then I'm different, I'm limited, we have differences, and then that'll cause some friction, will cause samsara comes from that. Right? And the abheda darshanam, seeing beyond the differences, seeing why it's just one really, why I am one, there's one consciousness which is behind everything. That one is brings moksha. That one it helps to go beyond samsara, like this. So this is the crux that it was saying. But of course, then the student, as we read, had some doubt about this because, and the doubt is good because the whole idea of what we're doing is to remove the doubts. So we keep looking into in order to go beyond, to see what the doubts are, ask about them, reflect on them, and go beyond them, and then negate them, because as long as the doubt is there, then I don't see this because it's not clear, like this. So what I found is when studying going to class for years, then, you know, what would happen, there would be a doubt. First of all, I would usually it come up after the class or something, so I would let it sit there for a week and I'd think about it. A lot of times it would be just resolved. Some of the time, not, you know, go and ask the question that helps give some more pointer to help to clarify. Some of the time I'd say, okay, I think I understand it, but I would ask in order to see, am I in the right direction? It helps to shed more light on that question. Because some of the time the answer would confirm, yes, okay, my mananam is pretty good, it's in the right direction. Some of the time it would say, oh, you know, there's other ways to look at it, or deeper, or different angle to look at when I heard. But in any case, we have to keep, as long as the doubt is there, it'll keep attacking it. So in here, there's just this one simple question, but in a lot of commentaries, you'll find that Adi Shankara brings a Purvapakshi, somebody with a different idea that argues against. And that's not in order to say, there's some philosophy out there that disagrees, let us, you know, ours is superior or something like this. But what doubts can I have? And a lot of these doubts are well ascertained ones that have been thought through, because it can just be a simple worldly thing that I'm not used to seeing in a certain way, or some philosophies that I thought very deeply about, right? And those ideas can come into my mind too, and those are stronger arguments against. And if those ideas come up in my mind, why I negate it? And I negate it not in order to show, oh, look, Vedanta is so great, that philosophy is not as firm, but in order to clarify my doubt so I can see this oneness. If there's another way to see it, very good, let that person see it, but why should I get confused and start mixing and then I won't see it clearly like this, okay? So in any case, so here we were at the doubt of the student, so we can read it again here at the end of page 37. Nanu sahankarasya kinchit yasya jivasya nirahankarasya sarvagyasya Ishwarasya Tattvamasiti Mahavakyat Katam Abheda Buddhi Syat Ubhayor Virudha Dharma Krantatvat. How can there be the knowledge of non-difference between the jiva, the individual, the one with the limiting I notion or ego, of limited knowledge, and Ishvara, the Lord, the one who is devoid of ego, who is all knowledge? How can that come about but by the Mahavakya, that thou art, because the two are possessed of contradictory qualities? Okay. Okay, so it's very good doubt, very good that it's brought up in everything. One interesting thing here about the Sanskrit anybody studies is if you have a noun and you have an adjective, they match with the number, gender, case, and then you know it's the same. But and then it doesn't matter where in the sentence you put it. This makes Sanskrit for writing in verse form very, makes it easier, because then you can just mix. You mix that, you can put the adjectives all over in that verse, and then no problem. But here the problem is Ishvara Jiva, both are put in the sixth case, possessive, and then what happens is you have to put all the adjectives of Jiva together with Jiva, all with Ishvara, otherwise they get mixed up. So this sentence is a little different. For those who some Sanskrit, the Nirahankara, Asahankarasya, Kinchiknyasya Jivasya, the Jiva. Nirahankarasya Sarvagnyasya Ishvarasya, the Ishvara. So here we have to keep them together, otherwise we can't know which adjective belongs to whom. But that's just a little bit aside. The main point here, okay, so there are these two things that you're saying, the Jiva, me, poor me, poor me who has to get up and deal with this big world, and I have a little bit of success, a little bit of happiness, but you know, but so much I have to deal with all this stuff, and it's stressful, and what's going to happen to me, etc., like this. And I have some power to do, but very limited, so I can only do so much, right? But then there's Ishvara, who is behind everything, the all-powerful, all-knowing, right? Sahankara, see, I have this little ego. What ego does Ishvara have? No ego, because there's no limited identity, you know? So how can this little one with little identity with the one infinite, how can this be one and the same? So this is the question, and it's the obvious question. Right? That's the obvious question one will have. That's why people say, how can this be? How can these two be the same? And it's saying because they have opposite qualities. Qualities are very different, right? With me, it's small and limited. With that one, what limitation? If you already take, we don't give Ishvara a body, right? But if you want to give a body, it has to be the whole creation has to be the body. No limitation, right? One of the mantras, it's in there, it says Akasha Shariram Brahma. You want to say what is the body of the God? Okay, no problem. The space is the body. Let that be like this. That's kind of like the student will say, but there has to be some body. How can I? Okay, so if you want to give God a body, give it the whole space. That'll be the body. like this. So, and the thing is also, I know something. But how much can I already know is very limited. Even the most brilliant human mind is still limited. It can only know a small portion of the totality of everything. But of course, Ishvara is the one behind everything. So of course, Ishvara is all-knowing, because everything here is as good as being in the mind of Ishvara. Because where's the whole creation coming from? Ishvara, it's all in all there, nothing here. Because if you take all the minds, everything, there's intelligence behind it. So it's all from the same place. So how can there be, you know, the difference? When look close at the creation, the whole creation, we say, is knowledge-based, right? It is knowledge-based because everything, in order to do anything, to create anything, you need the knowledge of it to do it. So to create the whole universe, the knowledge has to be there. Knowledge is creation, right? We have a difference between, put a difference between jnana shakti and kriya shakti. But to do something, the jnanam has to be there. You're speaking, knowledge has to be there to do. You're walking, right? You're doing any sort kind of activity. The jnanam is manifest as kriya. So the creation, whole creation, then it's jnanam of Ishvara, but it's also manifest as kriya, but it's jnanam is the base. So it's knowledge. So that's why everything behind the Ishvara is going to know. Right? But here, I only know this little, how can this be the same? How can I, student is saying, I don't see how this is possible. Right? Seems impossible, like this. So here now, the teacher actually repeats what he had said earlier, like this. But it's again something we have to bring ourselves back to again and again, because if we see there's a difference between two things, and there isn't really a difference, what is it that makes the there to be a seeming difference like this? And this is one thing when we study, if I have Shraddha, which is needed to really look into it, then I have to say, okay, I didn't get it yet. Okay, I haven't seen it yet. It's just the Shastra, the text is pointing out, Vedanta is pointing out something. I haven't totally understood yet, but, you know, I'll get there like this. You know, like same thing, the student goes, studies the science and doesn't understand yet, doesn't say, oh, the textbook is wrong, the teacher, the scientists don't know. They say, okay, I haven't understood yet why this phenomena, why they say it's caused by this way, what is really happening there. Okay, I have to study further to understand, like this. So in any case, so let's see, here now it's going to be explained. Iticena. Stula sukshma sharira bhimani.
Stula sukshma sharira bhimani.
Tvam padavachyartha.
Tvam padavachyartha.
Upadhi vinirmuktam.
Upadhi vinirmuktam.
Samadhi dasha sambandham.
Samadhi dasha sambandham.
Shuddham chaitanyam tvam padalakshyartha.
Shuddham chaitanyam tvam padalakshyartha.
It is not so. The immediate meaning of the word thou is the one identified with the gross and subtle bodies. And of course, causal body, you know, has to be there too. So identify with these three. The target meaning of the word thou is pure consciousness, the one free from the limiting adjuncts, the one who obtains in the state of samadhi, in which no object is seen. So here is the teacher is introducing these two terms, lakshyartaha and vachyartaha. So vachyartaha is the general accepted meaning or direct meaning, dictionary meaning, right? What is the meaning of this word? So if you look up, what is jiva? You know, individual, actually pranadharana, that which holds the prana, life force together. Living being, well, what meaning, if you translate to English, living being, right? Living being, so living entity, and that to hold together means held together, like a cell is held together. So it's held together, one unit like this, one limited unit of life like this. So jiva, that's the direct meaning. The individual, it's the direct meaning, right? That's the vachyartaha. And that's what it is. That's what we take it, you know, when we take it in day to day and everything, what's the general accepted meaning? So that's very good. Then there's lakshyartaha. Lakshyartha means the implied meaning, not the direct meaning. Because the implied meaning, and actually, we do this all the time, when a word is used, if the direct meaning makes sense, we take the direct meaning. But if the direct meaning doesn't make sense and there's an implied meaning that can be there, we take the implied meaning. This is how it works in general with language. When you say this person is a pillar of the society, right? Then a pillar, we know what it is. And, you know, if we were here and I'd say this pillar is there's a pillar holding up this building, then you'd look for it and you'd look for a pillar because that you take it as a direct meaning. You won't take it as some sort of implied thing. But this fellow or this lady is a pillar of society. We won't take it as this person is, you know, very strong and can hold everything up like this, physically hold things up. But understand, this person is, you know, one of the people that is doing a lot of work and helping people and keeping certain functionalities of the society going, or doing a lot of service to people in the world and in our community or whatever it is like this. Right. So we'll take the implied meaning, not the direct meaning there. This is how we would do it. So this is a general thing. The direct meaning doesn't work. An implied meaning is what we use then. Right? So here says, okay, which, when we're saying you, Ishvara and Jiva are the same, well, first look at what is the, which meaning do you want? If you want to take the direct meaning, you, this body-mind complex person, then, of course, then how can that be the totality? It doesn't make sense, right? So which one are you taking? You take that direct meaning, no, it won't make sense. And that here is said, sukshma sharira, sukshma stula sharira bhimani, the one who is identified with the limiting adjuncts, with the upadis, with body and mind. That one, right? Then this is the direct meaning that we're used to in day-to-day. But then, upadhi vinir muktam, when you look not at the upadhi, what is the essence behind? Who is it? Take away the upadhi, who is there? Right? We looked at panchakosha viveka, that's how I did panchakosha viveka. What are the upadhis? Who are you? If you put these aside, who is there? Like this. Not the upadhi, who is the essence behind it? Like this, vinir mukta. Samadhi dasha. Samadhi at the time when one isn't identified isn't objectifying, because I objectify. So when I'm objectifying myself, I objectify myself as I am this body. My leg is hurting, so now I identify with the physical body. So I'm identifying with that. Then I'm identifying with some limitation. The leg can hurt, but I say there's pain in the leg. I say I am having pain, right? How come some of the time I say I am having pain, some of the time I say the leg is hurting? Which is it? Am I experiencing pain in the leg, or am I in pain? Right? It can't be both. So either I am having pain, or I'm aware of pain. Which one is it? So as jiva, maybe I'm having pain. But as the sakshi, as consciousness, I'm aware of pain. Right? And I say, I'm very hungry. I didn't have breakfast today, right? I'm hungry. I'm very warm, right? I spoke to my aunt and uncle 2 weeks ago, whatever it was, and they said, oh, it's finally getting warm here in Michigan. It's finally in the upper 40s or this. And I said, boy, here when it hits, it's under 60 and we're cold. For them, it's warm, right? So they'll say, oh, it's nice and warm. Warm, I'm feeling warm, I'm feeling cold, I'm identifying with pranamaya kosha, right? Am I feeling warm, or am I aware of the experience, of the sensation of warmth? Right? Am I hungry, am I aware of hunger? Which one? Depends. As the jiva, yes, I'm hungry, I can say I'm hungry, but as consciousness, I'm aware of hunger, right? And I can say, I'm very disturbed. Or I can say, the mind is disturbed. Right? Which one is it? If I identify with the upadhi, with the mind, I am disturbed. This whole thing that's going on, I don't like. It's not okay. Blah, blah, blah. Why this person say this? You know, why is the world like this? Why did God do this? Why did God create the world like this? Why it's not fair? Or I can say, the mind is disturbed. When you, just by saying the mind is disturbed or there's pain in the leg instead of I am in pain, already makes a big difference. Meaning it's just something, it's a phenomena. You know, it's cold outside or it's windy outside or, you know, it's a beautiful day or it's a miserable day like this. It's sunny outside, it's windy outside. So leg is in pain, mind is peaceful, mind is disturbed. Then it's very different because then, yeah, it's something there, but that doesn't mean I am. I am is the abhimana. So that way I identify with the, right, with the manomaya kosha, like this. And then I can say my mind is not very sharp today, right? I can't think clearly today. Or I understand this very well, right? Then I'm identifying with the vijnanamaya kosha, this I'm very sharp, I'm very clear, right? I've heard that that one of the hardest professions to be the scholar is mathematics, for one reason, not just not in order you have to be very good at mathematics for it, but because at a fairly young you have to be fairly young to keep that sharpness of the mind. When you just in the 40s already, the mind doesn't have that same sharpness, that you can't do the same thing as you did earlier. So you have to get very much sooner, you have to get to the depth of it. That's what I've heard. Again, I've heard it. I'm sure there'll be disputes on it. But here again, so my mind is sharp. Now my mind isn't sharp. Now my mind isn't sharp like it used to be, so I can't do those same things I used to do, right? So that's the intellect. I can say, but here my intellect, I can say, I'm not sharp, I can't figure it out. But, you know, like I remember my father, he's, you know, very, very amazing mind. He could have been professor of anything. He was professor of computer programming. When I was a kid at the university in the town, he was the professor of computer programming. It was Department of Math and then Department of Math and Computer Programming. And he was the professor. Some other people, mathematics professors, started teaching some things too, but first he was the professor like this. So very sharp, and he could, in humanities, anything, could have been professor, very smart. Now, before he died, when he was cancer and not well, I remember that somebody who worked with him for many years brought something that he showed it, something he did, and his mind just couldn't get into and understand the concept. And he kind of, very quickly, his interest dropped. Because, you know, when you're withdrawing because you're dying, then a lot of these things, it's good you withdraw from things. People who don't want to withdraw from the thing from the world at that time, it's more difficult, right? So what happens is, the intellect was sharp, now the intellect isn't sharp. Like that. That's the Vijnanamaya Kosha. I can identify as Vijnanamaya Kosha, I'm the one who understands clearly or not. Or I say the mind is sharp, mind isn't sharp, right? Isn't me? No, it's an instrument, right? I'm the same one. I'm the one with the sharp mind or not sharp mind, with the one with the clear memory, with the one without a clear memory. Before I remembered everything clearly, yoga class we have. I used to exactly where we're at, what number, which leg, which everything in Surya Namaskar or Pranayama. Remember everything now, now, because I'm focusing on some things, saying some things about it or helping somebody with it. I forget, okay, which leg were we on? So the intellect, you know, you get middle age, whatever, it's not the same as it was. Okay, that's the intellect, what to do. I can say, I am not used to be like this. And actually, when we identify with it, then the abhimana is there in order to, so abhimana is identifying with. But then in order to for me to feel good about it, a lot of time people say, yes, I used to do like that. I used to do asanas like that. I used to have a memory like this. Because now it's not like that, but I was something because then I want to identify that I was something. But then it's difficult because I'm not what I used to be. Now how difficult it is. Because everything I have to let go eventually like this, right? No guarantee I can hold on to it. So when I identify with it, what? You know, first of all, I can feel inferior or superior, number one. But number two is later, as it's going away, when things are lost from it, how difficult it is. Or if it's not me, okay, you know, yes. It's an instrument, the instrument used to work well, not as well, okay, that's how it is. It's the instrument, okay? So this is the difference between them, like this, so. And here, samadhi, we don't mean some special state, I'm meditating and dropping everything, but the understanding is there that I'm not, when it's clear, that I'm not identifying as an object, not the objective way of seeing. Seeing as the witness in consciousness, not as the individual. Because how do I know I'm not the body? I'm the witness of the body, I'm aware. How do I know I'm not the mind? The thoughts come and go, I'm aware of them. So I know I'm something else, not that. That the whole point we gave with the 5 points about consciousness point this out. So then I know I'm the one who's in whose light this body is comes to light, in whose light the mind comes to light, comes to life. But I'm not that one, because that one is changing, I'm not changing like this. So that's the samadhi meant here, seeing it clearly, right? Samadhi, mind, I see clearly through the lens of viveka, right? Not through the lens of the the mind, just the thoughts, the mind, but through this clear seeing. Okay, so here he said, not objectify, right? That's he said, in which no object is seen, meaning I don't see it in an objective way, not through the mind, but seeing it as the sakshi, like this. Okay. So that at that time I'm not identifying with any of the upadhi, with the limitation. Then this can be seen. So same way we look at the Ishvara, just like we do with the jiva, now with the Ishvara is pointing out the same thing. Evam sarvagyatva divishishtaha Ishvarastat padavachyartaha. Similarly, the immediate meaning of the word that is the Lord, Ishvara, the one who is endowed with attributes, all knowership, etc. Upadishunyam. Shuddha chaitanyam tatpada lakshyartaha.
Shuddha chaitanyam tatpada lakshyartaha.
The target meaning of the word that is pure consciousness, free from limiting agents. So also when we look at Ishvara, same, we have to look with the upadhi or without upadhi. Which do you mean? So sarvagnyatva, all-knowingness, adi, etc. Vishishtaha, which is endowed with its specialty. This one's specialty is that. So here it said, the immediate meaning of that is the Lord who is endowed with attributes like all-knowership. So earlier we looked at what is Ishvara from that perspective. So the creator of the whole world, right? That's upadhi, right? As the creator, yes, that's the creator, the way, the ocean, and I'm the way, or I'm created from the ocean, yes. So this way, when I see the difference, when I see with the upadhi, it's like that, yes. Then I can't say I'm Ishvara. I'm the one who created this whole thing. And we don't have to, if I created this whole thing, but a headache to maintain and keep it going. So very fortunate I'm not that. Who wants that role? It's funny. People want the role of being the boss of a country. How many people want to be in each country as people who want to be the people, person in charge? What a headache it is in the end. But somehow they want to be. But in any case, if I'm the Ishvara behind everything, I'm the power behind everything, I'm the totality. This is again an upadhi. Because again, it's a role. It's to do with, it's tatastha lakshanam, right? To do the lakshana. It's not exactly tatastha. Let's put that aside. It's not an exact, it's doesn't work exactly here. But in any case, so there, yes, as the creator, yes, as the all-knowing, it still is Ishvara seen through Maya, Ishvara meaning Brahman through Maya. I saw me through my avidya, my upadis, now we said the totality through Maya. And Maya, we said, is Sattva Pradhana, where I was Malina Sattva Pradhana, if you remember last week we talked about that. So with me though, there is the ignorance in there. There's sattva, knowingness, but there is also the blemish of tamas. It's mixed with tamas. So I have avidya in there, that's why I don't see clearly. Right? That's why I see in this foggy way that I'm not seeing. But Ishvara, it's the upadhi, sattva, paradhana, no, clear knowingness, so there's no question about. Because if Ishvara was also samsari, then who would be free to point it out to somebody else? Right, you need somebody to start with. We chant Sada Shiva Samarambham. Knowledge starts from Ishvara, it has to start from the source. If from the source it's also unclear, there's no way to get out. We're doomed like this. So we can't say Ishvara Samsari like this. But in any case, so here, from the standpoint of the upadhi, there's a yes, difference. So if somebody comes and says, how can you be one with Ishvara? How can this Vedanta say? We'll say, well, we have to say, what do you mean by Ishvara? What do you mean by you? He says, you, this individual who gets up, who does some puja, who does some work, who enjoys some and is struggling, and the Ishvara, who's the creator of everything, who's the, you know, who's all-knowing, all-powerful, yes, then no, that's, we're not the same. That's not the same. Because that's the direct meaning. But if you say, do you mean the consciousness? Not the upadhi, but the consciousness, there you can't see a difference. Because we're so much used to looking at ourselves. As an individual, it's hard to look at it from a different angle beyond that. And there it seems that this difference is there. Very much seems to be. You know, somebody comes in and they don't know anything about electricity. You know, they've lived in some indigenous place where they don't have any electricity, running water, anything, right? They come here first time and they see the different lights in the house. And you say, oh yeah, these are connected, same thing. What do you mean? That one's here, this one's there. It's amazing that they're bringing light. I don't know how you did it. You must have put some fire in there. But how are you, what do you mean there's the same thing behind both of these? What do you mean by that? So you explain to them, listen, there's a wire and it goes through and that carries something called energy in the form of electricity and then it flows through and then, and look, if I turn this, they both go off. I turn it, goes well, and there's one thing behind. I say, oh, really? There's one thing behind both of those? Interesting, I would never have imagined it. Like this. So here I'll say, how can it be? Behind me and behind you and behind the whole thing, it's one and the same thing. How can it be? Look, we're separate here. Look, my thoughts are separate from your thoughts. Like this. Say, yes, but it's the same thing like this. It's because you're looking at the instrument, not at what's behind it in this way. And I'm so identified with the instrument, I'm used to that. Right? I'm used to it. We're so used to it that when we go to sleep, when I dream, I don't need to continue that way. But I continue me and the world because my samskara is like that. Right? But I need a break from it. If I didn't have a break, I'd go crazy. So the God gave us the deep sleep. Deep sleep, and we go back to the God. What is there? There's no limitation. So where's you and Ishvara in the dream? No difference. Right? So at least in the deep sleep, we get a small break. Small respite from this. Our guru used to say, you know, that he'd said, just to play role Swami Vishnu, you know, that's also a role. I have to, you know, the mind needs a break from it. It's not who you are. So needs the sleep or something, needs to drop it also. Like this. Otherwise we'll go crazy. So this is the important thing. Remembering that it's the upadhi which makes it seem to be different. Same thing as behind the upadhi. Same exact thing. Not something similar. Because when you're forgetting your body and mind, you don't feel limited, right? If you did yoga meditation or deep sleep, that time, what limitation is there? The limitation is of the body-mind, not of the consciousness behind it. So in this way, so it seems to be something separate. And also, we look into both of these, both as the individual and totality, because if I only look at the individual and I say, okay, I'm consciousness. Very good. I'm consciousness, I'm sakshi, I'm not body and mind. How do I account for this whole world? So I can't account for where this world came from, what it is. And if I just look at the whole world, there's one Ishvara, one power, one consciousness behind everything. Okay, but how do I account for myself? Who is this one? So there's this, the duality is me and world. And so that's why both are looked at, and then when I look at what's behind both, then I don't see the difference. Then I see there's one consciousness is behind both. Because those are the two areas that I have. I separate these two, so I have to understand both to see that separation is just in the upadhi level, not in the consciousness level. And this actually brings up one interesting point that is brought up then is, what happens is, the only way this happens also is that the upadhi and the upadhyaya, the what is seen through the upadhi, are not of the same order of reality. Meaning that the consciousness and the matter, you know, everything matter, because subtle bodies also matter, but subtle matter, they're not of the same order of reality, because if they were, then I could really be bound by this. So an example is when you see the movie, the light that's showing the movie is not, and the movie itself are not the same order of reality. The movie itself is a story that you need to see with your mind. Your mind has to, you have to see, your mind has to be active in order to make up the story and see all this happening. Now, the light that's showing it, is the light affected by it? No, because can the actors in the and any characters in the film do anything to the light? No, they can't, because there's the light. It's something totally separate. It can't be touched by that. Light is everything there, and all those things can't touch it. Or your dream world in you is the waker. The whole dream world is one thing, but it's a different order of reality. That's why you wake up and the whole thing is dismissed, because you know it's a dream. It has a different order of reality. That was just an idea, not an objective world. Here's the objective world. That's some projection by my mind. So here also, the consciousness is one thing, which is a different order of reality than the body-mind complex, than the material world. Because remember, Brahman seen through Maya, then this whole thing is there. So from absolute perspective, this world is like a dream from absolute perspective. Because seen through Maya, through the creative power, and which is an air, you know, an air, so everything is Brahman. So it seems something different, but it's just one thing. So it's in that way, the differences are because of this lower level reality in that way. Because if it wasn't a lower level of reality, then I as consciousness would be affected by what's happening. Same order of reality, there'll be some effect. Like the space is affected by objects in it, we know. You know, now that Einstein has come and told us, we know, right? In fact, the Chastita has said that, you know, the space is an element, right? And the space, you know, and then deep sleep, it's gone. When world isn't there, space is gone. That didn't matter. Now science has said warp's okay, now we're good with it. But that's fine, there's no problem with that. Because science has pointing this out is amazing, it's wonderful. So even that one is changing. But I'm always the same one, regardless. Any point in time, anything you go through, you're the same one. So the only way for it not to be affected is that it's not of the same order of reality, like the light in the movie, or you're the waker compared to your dream world. Otherwise, there'd be some effect. But it's never affected. So the only way it can be, it's not the same order of reality. One is superimposed on the other. The idea is superimposed. Otherwise, you know, how could it happen that it's not affected by, you know, it's not possible that it would, that you as the consciousness are not affected by all of this, right? So in this way, that's why we say, and that's why also, you know, it's not affected, and it can't be different. If there were two different consciousnesses, you didn't get to the bottom yet, like this. So this is where it's pointing out, no, there isn't a difference between the two, between the Ishvara, the totality, and the individual. That difference is superficial, like this. Okay. So this is what's being pointed out here. So, now continues here. Evancha.
Jiveshwarayor chaitanya rupena
abhede badhaka bhavaha. Thus between the jiva, the individual, and Ishvara, the Lord, because there's no difference in the form of consciousness, there is no difference. Here there's no contradiction, really. There's no contradiction. It's not contradictory here to say that jiva and Ishvara are one and the same. There isn't. There isn't any contradiction there. This is how it is. Badaka bhavan, there is no contradiction, because there's seeming contradiction. Energy is mass seems to be contradicting, but it's not. This table that I have the book and notebook on seems to be, it's mostly space. Though it seems to be very solid, there's no contradiction once we understand the physics of it. Mostly space, we understand. And I touch the table, but I understand later I never really touch the table, right? You can't really touch it. There's always some space difference, like this. So it seems to be a contradiction. Once we understand it, oh yeah, that's why it is like this. So here what seems to be a contradiction, that we're one, seems to be. But really, not. In all of Adi Shankara's commentaries, they say for the Brahma Sutra, he put the introduction, and that one is called Adhyasa. What is it called? Adhyasa Bhashya, the talking about superimposition. There, one of the things it talks about, you and I, is superimposition. Like here, Jiva Ishvara, you and I is a superimposition. Instead of Ishvara Jiva Bheda, it talks about Jiva Jiva Bheda, the difference of that is also superimposition. When we're two waves from perspective of Upadhi, we're different. Substance, water, same, not different. Now water, of course, any example goes so far, because water is still, you can separate into different things. Separate consciousness to different things, meaning you, yourself. Take your consciousness, can you separate it to multiple? You can't, right? I have this much consciousness up in my head and less down there. I have this much consciousness in the right and less to the left. Before I had more consciousness, now I have less consciousness. No, when you think about you as a conscious being, it's always the same. You can't break it up in any way, right? So the consciousness, you directly see in yourself, when you identify with the body in this, it seems to have a form, it seems to this. But just as consciousness, you can't break it up in any way whatsoever. So that's why, you know, there can't be a contradiction here, because as consciousness, there's no limitation. You know, we're just seeing the upadhi isn't separated, but as consciousness, you cannot separate, it doesn't work. The moment you separate means some upadhi there. So that's why here, there's no contradiction what we're saying, because consciousness isn't something you can break up. It's in the other class we're having, it gives a quote from one of the places, which says how it's, it is homogeneous and not limited. So then, asanga, what is it? Asanga ekarasam. It's untouched, unattached, right? Unaffected, and it's homogeneous. Think of that as consciousness. It's always homogeneous, never touched by anything. So how can the differences make it different? It can't. The seeming differences, so it's saying here, okay, that's why then. There's no contradiction here. I have to understand it correctly, that's all. What point of view we're looking at it, where you're looking at it from, like this, okay? So there is no difference. And then here, continues from here, now shifts into the palam, the result of this. That's actually the next part of the text, after saying about what is the crux, this aikyam. And this aikyam takes, if you're studying Vedanta, really, usually takes a little time to really appreciate it, because at least we understand the theory and the implication. At least that's where we start, Sharavanam. Then starting to look into it, because the implication is, phenomenal, like this, really phenomenal what the implication is. Because the implication is, when they make some discoveries, the Copernicus, right, the implication of this, the implication of the people, industrial revolution, the same implication of AI, industrialization of AI, the implication of this are amazing. Implication of this is something, unbelievable like this. Because we're always running, wanting to find security, wanting to find happiness like this, and we're not finding, right, that circle. How can I get out of the cycle? Saying this, you want to get out of it within the cycle, you can't. You have to look at the problem closely. And here, looking at the problem closely, the problem belongs to the upadhi, not to you, the consciousness. Mori, I know I'm the consciousness, not that. Okay, some problems will be there, but they belong to the lower level of reality, not to I, the conscious being. Because in I, the conscious being, none of these problems can touch, because that's the upadhi, not me. So the implications are phenomenal. So here talks about the result of this, starts here, the palam. Evancha.
Evancha.
Vedanta vakyaihi.
Vedanta vakyaihi.
Sadrupe, sadrupa, sorry, sadrupadeshena cha.
Sadrupadeshena.
Sarveshwapi bhuteshu.
Yesham
Brahma Buddhihi.
Yesham Brahma Buddhihi.
utpannate jiva mukta bhavanti.
Utpannate jiva mukta ityartha.
Oh, there it said ityartha here, jiva mukta bhavati. Bhavanti. No? Slight different word in different texts, no problem. And in this manner, due to the sentences of the scriptures and by the teaching of the Guru, those for whom the vision of Brahman is born in all beings, they are liberated while living. So here it introduces Jivan Muktaha. While living, one is liberated, is free. Usually they talk about, meaning in many religions, after you die, you will go to heaven if you follow these steps and these rules and, you know, come on the holy day for this religion and stamp the passport and, you know, and believe in certain things. So it's very safe for the religion because you have to follow them in order to go through that door to get to the place. Where the whole idea of Jivan Mukta is not liked by them because then you're free and you're not dependent on, on that institution or whatever, like this. But that's the thing is, what guarantee is when I die I'll get to a certain thing? Here we're talking about here and now. I want to be free then, or I want to be free here and now? I want to be free now. And after death, it's still upadhi. I dropped only gross body, subtle body still there, samskaras are still there. Why am I free then? So here it says you're free, not just can you be free now by living, you are free, you're just not aware of it. Jivan Mukta, one who knows, though I'm still alive, I know that I am the consciousness, so I'm birthless, deathless, like this. We'll discuss Jivan Mukta here more. But here it also says, how is this done? Vedanta Vakyaihi Sat Guru Upadeshena. How will I know this? How is this obtained? It says you need two things. One is the Shastra, the Upanishad. Because the thing is, we say this isn't Paurusheya Jnanam. Humanly, this isn't knowledge that is born from the human mind. The moment something goes through the human mind, it's something limited. My thoughts. I have a very good idea, right? So it's born from this limited mind, and so how can the limited mind something not limited be born? So we say the teachings aren't born from human mind. It's kind of like we'll say, is gravity born from Newton's mind? Is relativity born from Einstein's mind? No, it's discovered. They discovered some natural rule, natural phenomena that's already there. So here also, it's not that it's born. The rishis didn't create this thing. It's not like an iPhone that they created and can patent it, right? But it's something that phenomena they understood. So like this. So there's no individual on here. There's no individual also there to do, because when you're as the consciousness, you're not an individual. So the rishi can't say, I discovered this, because they're not there as an individual and it's when knowing it. So we say that's why these teachings, it's not something born from human mind. We use the intellect to understand it, but then to understand that I'm not the mind or intellect, right? Like this, so in this way. So the Vedanta, that's what's needed for this, because any other type of knowledge has to do with something that is not the consciousness, but the world. Any other knowledge has to do with the worldly thing. In one of the Upanishads we studied recently, the Mundaka, there it talks about two knowledges, paravidya, aparavidya. Apara, lower knowledge, paravidya. Paravidya is this, self-knowledge. Apara is everything else. Every other kind of knowledge can be useful for things, but it's not going to show you who you are. Like this. So that's one thing needed, right? These pointers are there. Now, of course, what happens is the pointers, what's being pointed out, the Upanishads are in Sanskrit, but if somebody's teaching, like here, most of them, we're reading the Sanskrit, we're talking in English. It's not that if I don't know Sanskrit, then I can't know the self. It's not like that. same pointers are there, can be used in other language. We're speaking English. We're using some of the text, because the text is in Sanskrit, and some of the technical things in Sanskrit, the whole, it's already there, and the out of reverence also those that wrote it like this, and also because some of the terminology, we don't have the terminology in English, it'll take so much more to do it, so we use that. But one doesn't have to. Any language can point it out. That's not the issue. And then Sadguru Upadeshena, so points out some other things, how we also learn. I just want to know, I'm going to go and sit and figure it out myself. I'm a self-made woman, self-made man, right? I can do it. So what happens here, it's going to be practically impossible to do it just on my own, because I'm the individual. I want to see myself beyond myself as the individual. It'll be very hard to do that. So that's why that the guru pointing it out is needed. Points it out to me when I'm just hearing, it's pointed out. It's not I am thinking this. Point it out, this is what you are. Oh, then it's not I am doing it. Because I know that I'm not this individual. How? It was pointed out. Oh, okay. Then it's not, it's a very different thing like this. And also the, there's one other thing is, you know, you sit and say, I'm the consciousness. Okay, it has so much power because we don't have that clear conviction, clear vision of it. But then somebody who has a clear vision of it points it out. Those words are much more powerful than you ask, and the person said, there's no doubt about it, you're this. It gives certain firm thing that you can't give to yourself like this, because it doesn't seem possible, but somebody really knows and points it out, it's very different. But in any case, here also the Sadguru, interesting here, Sadguru, there's a few different things it can be. One is Sat is also Brahman, so meaning Guru is teaching Vedanta, because Gurus can teach many things, can teach yoga, can teach many different things, right? Give guidance in things in life. So here it says, for knowing this, need Vedanta Guru, not Guru for something else, because the other one can teach good things, but not the self-knowledge. Won't point out the self-knowledge. Things can be helpful and can be even helpful for self-knowledge too, but not the self-knowledge itself. For this, that's what's needed, right? Because otherwise, it's still talking about what we said, the aparavidya, about anything else other than the self. So this is what's needed. Another thing said about Sadguru here also is that we said here the Vedanta Vakya, the teachings of the Upanishads are there. Now the thing is, if somebody's conveying them, then they have to be transparent. Like if I want the window, the light to come in from outside, I need to have the window be clean so it comes in. If there's a covering, it won't come in clearly. So the individual has to be out of the way for the teachings to come through. If it's my Vedanta, my ideas about it, then it's skewed. Then it doesn't come through clearly, then we mess it up. So the teacher has to be, just convey the teachings and not get in the way of the teachings like this. Of this specific thing, you know, my guru, I remember, because he taught Vedanta, but yoga Vedanta, all different yogas and this for people, came here and was teaching in the West. He would he invented a few things. He invented yoga vacation. Because what happened, he'd see, he was in Canada, this is in the mid-50s, early 60s, and then what would happen is, suddenly July comes and fewer people coming to class in Montreal. So what are they doing? You'd see they come back and they look kind of less healthy and more tired, they came back. Where did you go? Oh, went on vacation. Oh, it was really wonderful in this. What did you do? Oh, we went to nature and this. Oh, and we enjoyed so much and we stayed up and partied and all this. I said, oh, that's what you do. Okay. Come, we'll go and we'll do a yoga vacation. Okay, let's try yoga vacation. So instead of staying up late and drinking more and eating unhealthy and doing this, they would get up early and meditate and eat healthy food and do yoga. So he invented this. And then people come back recharged. At first they would struggle, oh, I have to get up early, it's vacation. They struggle, but they come back, they feel good. So other thing he invented was yoga teacher training course. There was no such thing, it didn't exist. He said, how are we gonna, I want other people to teach. So we invented it. So I brought that up, yoga teacher training course, he would teach 4 weeks. or it used to be 6 weeks, danger 4 weeks, come in the ashram. It's an excuse. Teacher, trainer, because you get a certificate. But you do a retreat for 4 weeks, 6 weeks in the ashram, yoga, meditation, sattvic food, talk some philosophy. It changes you. You do a whole month. Years it affects you. So you got a certificate, you teach a little yoga to other people. But what he would do, I've seen this in my own eyes, end of the course, he'll prostrate, he'll talk at the end, prostrate to everybody too, and says, anything that you got good from it is from Swami Shivananda, from my guru. Anything that wasn't good, it just came because my ego got in the way. So this Sadguru is, the teachings are there, Vedanta teachings are there. So as we study in this, if we talk about, if we teach, we have to convey it clearly as possible, because the teachings are there. If we get in the way, then that's the problem, like this. So we've just sincerely study well in this and understand it. But the teachings are, the guru has to be the transparent thing. It has to come through, not what's being pointed out here, what we learned from our teacher, not from something else. In Kena Upanishad, there the teacher in the Kena Upanishad is also saying there, this is what we heard from our teachers. Like this. Not, this is what I learned, this is what I know. No, like this. Because otherwise it's my mind, my idea, and then upadhi is getting in the way. Upadhi. So here, Sadguru, one who's teaching Vedanta, and also the teachings are the main thing, not, you know. That's why, you know, teachers that I know and respect very much, they don't take themselves guru, don't consider people disciples, just the teaching and that's it. Because they don't want to get caught up in other stuff, because there's so much other package deal that comes around the idea of guru that takes the attention away from the essence. Now somebody identifies as guru, somebody as student. And now a whole other relation is built up there. Instead of the relation is teaching, that's it. If other things come in, now another role comes in, new upadhi. New upadhi, so then new identification, other expectation, etc. And that's also a trap that unfortunately so many people get caught up in also, like this. So that's why here, no, it's just the teaching and that's it, finished. Anything else is not, you know, is not the essence, we'd be very careful about it, so like this. So that's why the Vedanta, what's needed for this Vedanta, I have to do Shravana, I have to go to, you know. And again, I say, like this senior Swami came now, next time I'll make sure. We'll talk about ahead of time. I felt a bit bad this time, like we could have just not had class this week and everybody either in person or see online. Because somebody much more senior, whole life dedicated to this, it's good for us to hear that. I heard yesterday, not always easy to hear, you know, we're not used to how that person speaks or whatever, but it's very good to do. That's why I also go always and learn, and I always point out, you know, my teacher Vijayji is teaching more advanced class. Swami Tatvinananjay, go here, please go hear him. Because people that really have much deeper knowledge, I respect, and I say, yes, it's good for us to hear them like this. So in any case, Sarveshu Bhute, and this one is seeing the one consciousness in and through all. That's the Jivan Mukta, and we'll look more at that next time, because what to do? The time comes and goes. We have our limitation in that here. The time is still the upadhi, right? I was here, class, the class came and went, but I, the consciousness, am the same one. Right? Sound like that. Om. Om. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. So before we go, any questions anybody has? Yes.
What is the definition of upadhi?
Upadhi? Upadhi is something that lends its qualities to something else, but but seemingly does, right? Seemingly limits something else. So A is qualifying B seemingly. The example we gave is the crystal. I hold it here and it'll look like it's white because it's in front of my shirt. Then we'll hold it near you and it'll look like it's blue because of your shirt. So it's limit. Now suddenly the color list has gotten color, so it's limited by color. Before, color wasn't a limitation, but seemingly does so. It's something like upastitam sitting next, and then dharati or something like it. Sorry, I don't know the exact thing, but being in proximity, it seems to take on the quality of something else. So the body-mind, as you know, in proximity to Atma, then they seem to take on the quality of the consciousness. And then it seems all consciousness now is limited, right? Because now I see that, but really, the light of consciousness is just, as we said, reflected in the mind. So now a reflection, it seems limited, but it's not the original one, which is not limited. Okay. So a direct translation, some people say limiting adjunct, but limiting adjunct doesn't explain that it's being near seems to impart limitation on it. Okay, seemingly does, but doesn't really. Your dream world, right? You're individual in the dream. When you wake up, you know you weren't that individual in the dream. It was imagined. So the whole individuality in the dream was an upadhi, that character you're playing. It was an imagined one. You know you weren't limited by that. You seemingly were. That was an upadhi you identify with, and then you drop that identification also. So the five koshas, three bodies, are also all upadhis. Anything else? Good. So we'll see you next time then. Take care.
Thanks so much.